My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. In 1939, the ocean liner SS St. Louis left Germany with more than 900 Jewish refugees fleeing anti-Semitic persecution. Arrangements had been made for them to disembark in Cuba with proper papers. Cuba denied them permission to land. The captain then attempted to bring them to Florida. Again, they were denied. After a final denial of entry by Canada, the ship returned to Europe, where some of the refugees were accepted into the United Kingdom, Belgium, the Netherlands, and France. Many were later caught in Nazi sweeps of the occupied countries and ultimately among the 6 million murdered in the concentration camps. There were survivors from the SS St. Louis, a journey called the Voyage of the Damned, and many had heart-wrenching stories to share. One of those is the miraculous story of a little girl saved by an amazing act of love. Joining me on Destination Unlimited this week is my dear friend Judith Capel Steele. Judy was that little girl, and her moving story is one of love, sacrifice and separation, redemption and hope. Judy is an ordained interfaith minister, cantor, Reiki master, and devoted mother and grandmother. Her website is cantorjudithsteele.com, and she joins me this week to share her story and her just-published book, Love Brought Me Through the Holocaust. It is my honor and pleasure to welcome to Destination Unlimited my friend, Judy Steele. Judy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate that.
Let's start with how we met and became friends. That was back in 1995 when I enrolled in the new seminary and also joined the new synagogue, which was founded by our beloved Rebbe Joseph Gelberman. I remember the first time I attended services and heard this lovely voice singing, "Return again, return again, return to the home of your soul." That was you. You were the cantor. We met and we became great friends. Those were special days, weren't they?
Oh, they certainly were. And I miss Rebbe very much.
I do too.
It was an adventure being friends with him and traveling with him and working with him and being his assistant. And it just was a great, great honor. Good karma. Good karma.
Absolutely good karma. And as our listeners may or may not know, he transitioned 10 years ago.
Yes, 2010. September 9th. This is actually the yard site.
That's right. And that was on his just 98 years old at the time. And one of those people who came to this world with a mission, and his mission was to teach us and to teach the world how to take care of one another, have compassion and love one another. And for that, I'll ever be grateful to him.
Yes, I am too.
It was in one of our early get-togethers that you shared your deeply moving and heart-wrenching story. It's a story that you have devoted much of your life to sharing so that humanity never forgets the atrocities of the Holocaust and never allows this to happen again. Let's start with your father and your mother. Who were they and what were your earliest memories of them?
My father, Joseph, my mother, Irmgard Coppel, couple, there's a K with an umlaut. They must have been the most spiritual and the most loving people that I know. And that's why my book is named Love Brought Me Through the Holocaust. It was because of them. My first memories of them was when I was about 2 or 3 years old. They were very gentle people, as far as I remember. They wanted to hold on to me as long as possible. They knew what was going to be.
Absolutely. You know? What did your father do for a living?
He was a fur dealer.
And your mom?
My mom was a milliner. She used to make hats.
What? Used to make hats?
The hats, yeah. Women's. I think it's just women's hats. I remember, one thing I remember about my mother was always, she always was wearing a hat. Outside, anyway, not in the house.
Now, you were born in Berlin in February of 1938, 9 months before the infamous Kristallnacht, the Night of Falling Glass. What were the Nazis doing on the months leading up to this, and what happened on that night?
Well, it's hard to say. As I was very young at the time. I can't even remember Kristallnacht. But the Nazis were starting to shun the Jews and beat up the Jews, and they were killing Jews. It was really a bad time. I don't remember. My parents were very protective over me, I'm sure. And I don't remember Kristallnacht, but I know that the Nazis were coming in and destroying, setting fire to their businesses, and they killed and they beat up, and synagogues were burnt. That I know. And it wasn't until Kristallnacht that all these terrible things happened. That was it. November 9th and 10th of 1938.
Yes, and it's called Kristallnacht, the Night of Falling Glass, because windows were smashed.
Exactly. They looked like pieces of glass, of crystal.
Now, the Nazis, after these horrible acts, started arresting Jews, and your father was one of the people that was arrested. What happened to your father?
My father was arrested, and he was put in a concentration camp called Fresnes du Salt, No. 7. And interestingly enough, that camp was in the northwestern part of France, and that, which was very interesting because it wasn't in Germany. So he was imprisoned there for 2 weeks, and after 2 weeks, he was told that he can leave. However, He must leave Germany within 8 weeks. And if he didn't leave Germany within 8 weeks, he and his family, meaning myself and my grandfather was there, and he would have been arrested again and put in a concentration camp.
So he was given the option. He was told that he had to get your family and somehow or another get out of Germany within that period of time.
Yeah.
How did they find out about the SS St. Louis?
Well, they were looking into many other ways of getting out. They were pretty desperate. And the SS St. Louis was one of those ships that allowed, more people to come on. And I think that the people on the ship weren't aware of the fact that this ship was called the Voyage of Doomed, or the Voyage of the Damned, because we were damned.
How old were you when your parents and grandfather took you aboard the SS St. Louis?
I was 14 months old.
You were 14 months. Now, I know that your memories of that time were probably vague, but what were you told about that journey? What happened on the actual journey across the ocean?
Well, as this is what I hear about, because I don't remember the ship at all. So I understand they were having a good time. They had a pool there, a swimming pool. They had games for the children. At night, there was dining and dancing. And, everybody was having a very good time. And that was before, It wasn't until they got to Cuba that they were told that they wouldn't let them off the ship. And there's a picture in the book, The Voyage of the Damned, where it's of my mother looking over the railing, and she had the most frightened look. At first I looked, I said, no, this, yes, it's my mother. you know, it was kind of a vague picture, but it was definitely my mother. Here she was looking down as if, please, please, let us off. We have a terrible fate waiting for us in Germany.
Now, your book actually features many of those pictures, including a picture of your father looking over the deck of the St. Louis. And the book is crammed with these amazing photographs and documents and notes and letters that listeners, when you get this book and start reading it, it is going to be not only enthralling and engrossing, but it's going to get into your heart, and you're going to empathize and feel what these people felt as they were going through this process. It's a beautifully put together book, and we'll talk more about that later on in the show. So you were denied access by Cuba, and then the captain went where?
The captain, well, we tried to get into countries, the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. Nobody let us in on the Western Hemisphere. Then we tried to get into the United States. And, of course, the State Department didn't let us in. They had Coast Guard, the United States Coast Guard, started chasing us away. Then when we came to Canada, we wanted to see if we could get into Canada. And we were told that one is too many. Could you take these 900 passengers? One is too many.
And did you ever find out why both the United States and Canada refused entry? I know that there's a forgiveness, and we'll talk about that later, but why did that happen?
Well, I think that it was the president was Roosevelt, and it had to do with him running a third term. They wanted to, it was all politics. You know, I'm not exactly a good historian, but I know that you know, they tried. You know, the Jewish organizations tried to negotiate, but you know, of course, I think that also Hitler had a part in this. You know, he wanted to show the world that nobody wanted the Jews.
So the ship was turned around finally after Canada and sailed back to Europe. What happened?
Well, we went back to Europe, and finally Belgium was, you know, said, okay, they can land in Belgium, but they couldn't take all of us, you know. So one part went to England, another part went to Holland, another part went to Belgium and France. And my family and I went to France.
And in France, you rented an apartment, or your parents rented an apartment, and your grandfather, from the woman you call Mama. Yes. What were your earliest memories of her?
I remember her as a tall, beautiful woman. Although when I saw her again, she was not that tall. But to me, a little child looking up, she's tall, you know. She was absolutely gorgeous. She looked like a movie star. And she had this milky white skin and black hair and, you know, curls going down, those ringlets going down on her face. And I immediately fell in love with her because of her gentleness. There was a lot of love between she and myself immediately. And I used to call her Maman Suzy. Maman is mother, mommy. She had a daughter named Suzy. And so I decided to call her Maman Suzy.
What was it like living in that apartment, as you remember?
In that apartment, we felt safe. I felt safe. And I... anytime I wanted to go play with the daughter or be with Mama, I could, you know, it was just a very happy time for me. I was never aware that, you know, that there was going to be such terrible things happening, you know, within that year. It was a very short time.
So in September of 1942, that brief time of security that your family shared came to an abrupt end. What happened?
That's September
1942. Yes.
I remember there was a knock on the door. It was either early in the morning or in the middle of the night. It was dark, you know. So there was a knock on the door, and there was a lot of commotion. My grandfather was crying and crying. He couldn't stop. So, and he was too sick to get up. He had some kind of illness. Later on, I found out that he died from a massive stroke. But at that time, I don't know, he was just crying. He was in bed. And my mother and father were there. And I remember the French police were standing there. And they were waiting for us to, you know, to get ourselves going. We didn't have any time to pack, for sure. And I remember my mother saying something to my mom, you know, and what she said, I'll never know. Probably take care of my little girl, who knows. And we were taken away by the French police and handed over to the Nazis. They took us to a camp called Gurs, which is in the southern part of France. They handed us over there. And the only memories of that I have of Gurs is a lot of soldiers standing there with machine guns, you know. And we stayed in Gurs for a while. I remember having tomatoes to eat. I don't remember anything else about the food or anything, you know. I must have lost a little weight, but who knows.
Do you remember any of the other families that were there?
Not in Gurs, but we were taken from Gurs to Rivesaltes. And I remember Rivesaltes as, another camp where they had long houses with beds on either side. This was actually where the children slept. And across from my bunk, there was a family. And they were the most beautiful family I could ever imagine. I just looked at them. I wanted them to be my sisters. You know, there were three sisters and a mother. And I immediately fell in love with them and wanted to be with them. Later on, I wrote about it in the book about a family called the Gutmans. Many years later, I did meet one of the Gutmans, and I read their story in the paper. I had come back from France, I believe. And I saw an article in the New York Post, and it was right at the front page of the New York Post. It said, Holocaust survivor goes to France to meet her savior. And I thought to myself, well, this Holocaust survivor, me, I went to France to meet my savior, you know. So this got me interested, of course. And I read the story, and each of the towns that she mentioned, Gurs and Rivesaltes and being in Nye was where I stayed, you know. So I had to finish reading that. And later on, I called the New York Post, and I wanted to get the name of the person who wrote that article, and they connected with me with him, and I left a long voicemail message telling them who I am and that I'd like to meet this person who went to France to meet Savior, you know. I found out many years later, by the way, this particular savior also had something to do with my family, but I'm not sure what anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. She was a Rothschild. I never heard of this family until recently. Her name was Mademoiselle Rothschild.
So you had actually connected with another member of that family, the Gutman family.
Yes, I did. Actually, she called me up, and we talked very briefly. And then she called me back, and she said, my sister said that we were all wondering what happened to little Judith. What happened was that their mother went over to my mother and said, don't take Judy on the train because that train is going to Auschwitz, and Auschwitz is not a war camp. And that's why my mother left me behind.
And we're going to talk about that in the next segment, which is the most heart-wrenching part of the story. My guest, my dear friend, Judith Capel Steele. She's the author of the book, Love Brought Me Through the Holocaust, A Daughter's Memories. Judy, please tell our listeners where they can get this book and find out more about you.
Well, it can be gotten at Amazon. It's on sale there. And you can go to my website. It's www.cantorjudithsteele.com.
And we'll be back with more of Judy and her amazing story after these words on the Olden Times Radio Network.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
So I'm a cat. And I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is my dear friend, Judy Steele. She's the author of Love Brought Me Through the Holocaust, A Daughter's Memories. Judy, in one of the most heart-wrenching parts of your story and your book, you share how your parents made a decision out of total love for you that changed your young life forever. Please tell our listeners what happened.
One evening, my mother came to visit with me in the long barracks where I was sitting, where I was sleeping. And this kind of shakes me up. You have to bear with me, okay?
Absolutely. Take your time.
A lot. My mother and I were playing. You know, she was bouncing me on her knee up and down, and there was this old poem, Hoppa Hoppa Reiter, Wenn ich fällt, es schreite. She was just having a good time, wee, up and down. all of a sudden she stopped. And I'll never forget the look in her eye when she said to me, "Judy, Mommy and Daddy have to go away. I don't know when we'll be back." And I remember her saying that. And I still, to this day, can see the look in her eyes, because it never went away. And I said, "No, no, Mommy, nothing's going to happen." I was trying to, you know, shake her. "Come on, let's have fun, you know." And she said, "Okay." And she was going through the motions of playing with me, but she still had that look in her eye. And later on that evening, my father came in from where he had to be, because they were doing labor in that camp. And he whispered something to my mother, and very quietly, he turned around to me and he said, "Come on, Judy, let's go for a walk." And I went, I was delighted. You know, my father and I were very close, like my father and daughter. Yes, we went for a walk. I remember my mother giving me a kiss on the cheek and saying, "Bye-bye, have a good time." And so we went. We walked through the woods somewhere until there was a place where there was light, that I recall, and a few people that were there. And they were people from an organization that was working underground in order to, you know, to save some Jewish children. So we walked and we saw these people, and my father was whispering something to one of them, and, you know, a short conversation. And then my father was holding my left hand, and he said to me, pointed to something on my right, and he said to me, "Look over there, Judy." And I looked at something that was interesting to a four-year-old child. And I kept on looking, and then I felt my hands being dropped. He said, "Just a minute, Judy." Dropped my hand. Next thing I know, my hand was picked up again. And when I turned around, my father was gone. Someone else was holding my hand. And I just didn't know where he was, and I just got hysterical. "Where's my mommy? Where's my daddy?" Well, at that time, "Where's my daddy?" But then, "Where's my mommy too?" And I never saw them again. I never saw my mother or father again. I understand they were taken on a train to Auschwitz, first to Drancy, and then to gather some more prisoners, and then to Auschwitz. And I only would prefer to think that they didn't suffer in Auschwitz. That they, if they had to go, then they should just go right away and not feel so much pain. I'll never know how they died or what happened to them. And this is something that I've been thinking of since I wrote the book.
What an act of love.
Yeah.
How many people, just, you know, this is just musing with you and holding you in this energy right now, how many people would deliberately give up their children to save their lives? I mean, this is something that's just even unthinkable in our world today.
Yeah, it boggles my mind even to this day. And it brings me to tears even to this day.
And I'm surrounding you with love right now, and my friendship, and giving you a virtual hug as we're apart, but holding on to you and allowing you to process this and just...
It's hard to process.
I know. So after that event, what happened?
What happened was, they had given me a warm drink as I walked in. They gave me a warm drink. And, after that, there was hysterical crying because there were a few children there screaming, "Where's my mommy? Where's my daddy?" And I finally fell asleep, and I probably fell asleep because of that drink. There must have been something in the drink to quiet us down, because the Nazis weren't supposed to know that we were there. So I woke up the next morning. It was an empty barrack, and I remember walking there and, seeing nobody there except that beautiful family. They had a different karma than I had. They went to, later on, she was saved by this mademoiselle that I was telling you about. And they escaped through Switzerland. They went to Switzerland. And that's how they spent the war years. And Sylvia, the youngest one, had gotten very, very sick. I think it was diphtheria, one of those bad illnesses, So I saw that family there, just all by themselves. They had nobody else.
And then this organization placed you. What did they do?
They placed me, Papa Arnal, that's my mom's husband, came the next day, to pick me up with the car, and he drove me to his house where my grandfather was.
So once again, you were back with Mama.
Once again, I was back with Mama.
And basically, they brought you in and took care of you. What were those years like?
It was interesting. When I got back to Mama's house, everybody was there. My mom was there, and Opa, my grandpa, was there. And Opa picked me up, in German, "I'm so happy to see you," and hugging and kissing me. And I saw my mom, and I just turned around, and I wanted to hold her. And that was how, how close I was with her. She took care of me like I was more than her own child. She healed me when I needed to be healed. I had these terrible sores on my back, and she was putting iodine on it, which was stinging like crazy. But she kept on saying, "It's okay, my little one. It's okay. You're going to get better." And she, at one point, she called a doctor to come over to examine me. And the doctor just looked at her and he said, "She's so malnutrition, I don't think she's going to make it." And guess what? My mom healed me.
Absolutely. And she raised you as her own.
Yes.
And protected you from the Nazis.
Oh, and how? The Nazis once came into our furniture. They lived in a house where on top there was a furniture factory. And the Nazis came in and they took over the furniture factory. And that was, when they came in, my mom was very much afraid that I shouldn't speak because I had a German accent. So she used to tell me, "Ne parle pas, don't speak. And I have to put your hair on top of your ears. You see my ears now. I have to put your hair, the hair on top of your ears, because the ears are sticking out, and then they'll know that you're Jewish." So the French had certain ideas about how Jewish people look. Long noses, horns, who knows? But she meant well. She didn't, otherwise she would have given me up, but she really, really loved me and she wanted to protect me.
And you attended French school?
I went to French school. I was in L'École des Filles, the school of the girls. And I spent 2 years in school there, first in kindergarten, and then went first grade. My first grade teacher did not like me. I don't know why. I was Jewish. Mm.
And you went to Catholic Church.
I went to Catholic Church. I made the sign of the cross. I wanted to be converted, but my mom wouldn't have me converted because she had respect for my Jewishness. But I did go to church every Sunday, and I enjoyed it. I loved all the. I loved Christmas. I loved Easter. You know, these are all. That's why I became an interfaith minister, because I can't. You know, we all have the same God. Whoever, whatever religion we are, we're all part of that same God.
After the war, there was another major traumatic transition that brought you to the United States. What happened?
Oh, boy. So the war was over, and, you know, there was a lot of dancing in the streets and celebrations, but it also was time for me to leave my mom. Although I was able to stay for another half a year or so, they had to find a passage for me to get back to go to America. So I stayed with my mom. I think it must have been a year. And whenever my mom would talk about going to America, she'd look very sad, and she didn't want to, she didn't want to let go of me, just like I didn't want to let go of her, you know. So the time came that it was time to say goodbye. My mom took me to Paris to and we stayed in a hotel. And she, when I was, you know, she sang me a little song. She always used to sing to me. The next morning, we had to go to the OSE. And my mom brought me there, of course. And all of a sudden, she said to me, "You have to go. I have to leave you. I have to leave you now." And the whole thing, same thing happened again. You know, Judy, look over there, Judy. Here, I have to leave you now. And I said, no, don't leave me. Please don't leave me. Don't abandon me. Please don't. So I'm holding onto her hand as I'm saying this, and she's holding onto mine. But she was supposed to let go of me. And it took a couple of people to just pry us apart. And she went. Later on, I found out, you know, when I saw her again, I found out that she couldn't stop crying. Mm. It was pretty. They put me in an orphanage after Mama left. La Villa de Glycine was called, and there I think I caught some lice in my hair. Mm. No big deal. Kids get lice in their hair.
How old were you at the time?
I was 8 years old.
8 years old.
It was. I was not a happy camper going to the United States.
I can understand. And we'll be back with more of Judy's story. My guest, my dear friend, Judy Steele. She's the author of Love Brought Me Through the Holocaust, A Daughter's Memories. We'll be back with more of Judy after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions. but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book, take a walk, unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September, paint a self-portrait, catch up on a TV series, do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
As humans, we ask ourselves all kinds of questions. But what if we were forced to ask ourselves a question every day that affected the outcome of the most basic things, the most important things in our lives? The question is, what is your sexual orientation or gender identity? And the answer is the difference between keeping your job or getting fired. The answer is the difference between staying in your home or getting evicted. The answer is the difference between receiving medical treatment or not. Because in 30 states, it's legal to discriminate against people based on their answer to this question. LGBT Americans have the right to say, "I do," but they don't have the same basic rights as everyone else. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. She wasn't even really sure where she was at.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it. I felt so much better after my son told me, "Mom, we'll figure it out."
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is my dear friend Judy Steele. She's the author of Love Brought Me Through the Holocaust, A Daughter's Memories. So you wound up in the United States and you were with your aunt and uncle. How was that?
Well, I felt strange, you know. It was a different language. It was different people again. And all I knew was I wanted to go back to my mom. I wasn't allowed to write in French or read in French or speak in French. Not that I had anybody to speak to. I didn't have anyone. But I wasn't allowed to write in French to maman, which was something that was devastating for me. I guess my aunt didn't really understand that I was, you know, this was a woman that saved my life and gave me all the love that I could ever need, you know, during that devastating time. I was told that this part of your life is over, and we finished it, and we start now, and that's it. So forget about, you know, therapists or anything. There was nothing in those days. I forgot my French, and I forgot how to speak French altogether. I forgot how to write. And it was very devastating for me. It really was. My aunt didn't really, I didn't feel very much love coming from her. As a matter of fact, I didn't feel any love coming from her. I tried damn hard to please her, but everything was her boys. And I was always called stupid. Oh, she's so stupid, 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 stupid. Once I came home with the top marks in my class, you did the most improvement, you got the highest marks, and they gave you little presents, you know, as a reward. And when I came home, I showed her the presents, the rewards, and I said, look, I improved and got the highest marks. And she just looked at me and said, big deal, stupid. So these are memories that, later on in life, we sort of grew together, you know, but these are memories. These are bitter memories.
Absolutely.
I've come to terms with it. Forgiven her, you know, for not being so thoughtful, not, you know, I don't want to say for being stupid, but no, she did the best she could. I was an invader in her house.
Speaking of forgiveness, one of the great lessons that Rebbe Gelberman taught us was not to hate. He said, hatred is like taking poison and expecting the object of the hate to die. Have you been able to find forgiveness to the United States and Canada for refusing your family and the other passengers of the St. Louis?
Yes. Well, we went on a ship, not a ship, but we went to Canada first, and we were invited by an organization called Watchmen of the Nations. It was a charismatic group, and they had heard about the St. Louis, and what they did was they invited the passengers that were left to Canada in order that they could apologize to them formally. And that first trip was amazing. You know, when we went there, we were treated like royalty. And they had a special ceremony where, oh my God, we were going into they took us to a ballroom that was a ballroom, and they asked us, you know, just wait outside, stay here, don't worry, you know. And all of a sudden we heard some music coming from inside, and then they said, okay, go inside. There were about 500 people there, and the music was loud, and it was, that they were standing up and clapping. And as you can imagine, I probably, you know, wear my mascara, if I had any, went all over the place. I couldn't stop crying during that whole time, because they had representatives from all parts of Canada, including Canadian Indians, apologizing to us. And also they had a man from Cuba who was a minister. He got up and he apologized, and he said, I feel so sorry for my country did this to you. And he stood up and looked at us, and then he went down on his hands and knees and bowed to us. This was one time of one of the times of forgiveness that I really stands out in my mind.
And you also received an apology from the U.S. State Department.
Yes, we received this. Yes, we did. And there was a resolution. I think I have that resolution in my book. Also, we went to, we were invited to go to, besides Florida, we went to Hamburg, Germany. And there, the apologies from these German Gentiles were just amazing. I mean, these people stood up and they were hugging and kissing us and asking for our, begging for our apologies. And all of them, all of a sudden, just went on their hands and knees and begged us to forgive them. How could you not forgive people who weren't responsible for this? They were apologizing for mothers and grandmothers and grandfathers and fathers, people that were way beyond, you know, beyond their age.
And you also visited Auschwitz.
Yes, we did. I went to Auschwitz twice. And both times I had, oh my God. The first time I went to Auschwitz, we were with a group called the March of Remembrance and Hope. And I was on one of the buses talking to the children, to the students that were there learning from us. Anyway, the day we went to Auschwitz, we were supposed to get up in the morning early and meet downstairs no later than 8:30 in the morning. So I called the operator. I wanted to be, you know, fresh and ready to go. My phone didn't go. I mean, they didn't call me. And when I entered, so at 8:30, I woke up. I woke up at 8:30. I was shaking like a leaf, because that's why I went to Poland in the first place, to be where my parents were buried. You know, other people have cemeteries that they go to prepare respect to the parents. My parents' cemetery is Auschwitz, and that's why I needed to go.
And there's a poem about this, isn't there?
I'd like to read a poem by a very, very good, wonderful friend of mine. His name was David Rothblatt, and he wrote this poem especially for me when I was going to go to Auschwitz. In this mournful place, a somber one to see, a truly saddened space of anguished memory. What is the reason for this keep? No one will ever know, but children's tears and widows weep makes the flowers grow. That loved ones lie forever in sorrow beneath this earth, drenched in pain with the flood of tears. The flowers are their only worth. The wind blows quietly in this place and seems a gentle sigh, but it's children's tears and widows weep and the sound of their soulful cry.
Thank you for sharing that. I know that's a very difficult thing for you to share, but thank you. It is in the book. So let's just tell our listeners that you did have some happiness and joy and some wonderful things and continue to have them in your life. You got married. You have two beautiful children, Gary and Allison. You had taken up when you were younger the guitar and started singing, and that singing led you to being entertaining a guru through Siddha Yoga. And yes, through that guru, you met Rebbe Gelberman, and through Rebbe Gelberman, you became his cantor and his confidant and his dear friend and his assistant. And also he brought you into interfaith ministry and did all those wonderful things. And that's how you and I met. And that's why we are here today together. And I just want to tell you that I, in my heart of hearts, I love you and adore you so much, not only for your courage, not only for your willingness to share your story, but the fact that you've spoken this story around the world to groups. Your materials and your words are in the Holocaust Museum. And you are a representative of an era that we must never, ever forget, and never allow this world to experience what you experienced ever again. Thank you so much, Judy.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
My guest, Judy Steele, my dear friend, her book, Love Brought Me Through the Holocaust, A Daughter's Memories. Judy, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
You can go to my website, which is Cantor Judith Steele, with no E at the end, cantorjudithsteele.com. You can find it there, and you can buy it straight from Amazon.
Judy, it is so wonderful to bring your story to our listeners. I love and adore you, and I hope to be able to physically see you real soon.
I'd like that very much.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the voice, Furman. Have a wonderful week.